Hello and welcome to a special WHUS Public Affairs presentation on libraries and the USA Patriot Act. In reaction to the terrorist attacks against the United States in 2001, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act. This extensive package of legislation modified numerous details of existing law, giving the federal government more power to watch and investigate anyone suspected of a crime. One of the provisions of the Patriot Act that has stirred a great deal of controversy has been Section 215. This section gave the government greater power to obtain records from private businesses and public institutions, including libraries and bookstores. In response, some librarians and civil libertarians across the United States have been publicizing this new power and its potential threats to the privacy of law-abiding members of the community and innocent bystanders. As part of this educational effort, Claudette Tennant spoke at the Maine Library of the University of Connecticut in May 2003. She is an internet policy specialist with the American Library Association. Before her presentation, this reporter was able to conduct an interview with Ms. Tennant. This is George King from WHUS Radio, and it's May 15th, 2003. I'm at the University of Connecticut in the Homer Babbage Library, and I'm speaking with Claudette Tennant from the American Library Association. Thanks for being with us.
George, it's nice to be with y'all. Thank you for having me.
So could you tell us a bit about yourself and the American Library Association, and what is the mission of the ALA?
Well, I've worked at the American Library Association for 8 years. I am a librarian. I've served as a lobbyist there and as a policy analyst, which is my current position, internet policy specialist. The American Library Association is the oldest and largest association, a library association in the world. And our mission is really to strive for the best possible library services for the people of America.
One of the main reasons you're here with us today is to speak to the people at this library about the USA Patriot Act. So briefly, for anybody who missed it, what is the USA Patriot Act?
It's a piece of legislation that was passed very quickly after the events of September 11, 2001. And its primary focus was on expanding the powers, the investigative and the search and seizure powers of federal law enforcement.
Now, how does the Patriot Act affect patrons of libraries and bookstores?
There are a couple of different provisions in there that affect patrons of libraries and bookstores, but the primary one that really draws our attention is Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which is an amendment to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1976. And this particular amendment focuses on a provision that used to provide the FBI with a broader ability to look at or to seize records that were of business transactions. And the original act specified five very specific areas or specific types of records that could be seized. The amendment broadens that so that they are able to seize any tangible thing. So it broadens the type of material that can be sought. As you probably know, libraries are not sacrosanct. They're not immune to court orders. When law enforcement need to go into libraries and seek information from libraries on patrons, on circulation records, they're able to do so through a regular court order procedure. What this provision does is lower the level of the burden that the law enforcement has to meet prior to getting that court order. So it did two things. It lowers that burden, and it also expands the type of information that can be sought.
So before the Patriot Act was passed, what would they have needed in order to gain this information?
Probable cause. Some type of indication that a crime had been committed or was about to be committed. Now it's much squishier than that, and it's really more about, you know, not probable cause, but reasonable suspicion or
a less specific
level of certainty.
So it's a weaker standard, and that makes it easier for them to get information, even if it isn't particularly about a crime or a crime that they are suspecting could happen.
Right. It still has to pertain to foreign intelligence. However, even those definitions have been expanded as well. So Now, terrorist activity is defined a little bit differently. So in just several different places, they broadened definitions and lowered standards.
Now, I've reviewed Section 215 a few times. The overall law of the Patriot Act is more than 100 pages, but Section 215 is only about a page, so anybody could really look at it to get a start into understanding how the Patriot Act works. It doesn't specifically mention libraries or bookstores. Earlier you mentioned how previous law, there were specific businesses they could be, they could request or demand the records from. So what were some of those kinds of businesses, and is it limited to just businesses, or does it the current law have a broader reach?
The current law is not limited to just businesses. It talks about any type of transaction in regular business, but it's not limited to, say, a car rental agency. Some of the categories of information or transactions, the former law really did focus on transactional data, and some of the places that were subject to this law were hotel records, room rental records, car rental records. So the types of transactional data that would pinpoint a person in place and time, or indicate that they had the means to be involved in a particular activity.
So if a Soviet spy was, he flew into Washington and he rented a hotel and he rented a car somewhere, and they could be able to follow him that way.
Right. Or if pieces of a rental car were found in a car bombing, they could trace back using this provision. It's a provision that works much more quickly than the regular processes for court orders.
Before the Patriot Act became a law, what did the FBI need to do if they wanted library patron records, and how is it different now?
They needed to, the FBI needed to establish probable cause. They needed to go before a court, and the courts, the records of the courts were, I'll say, more publicly accountable. They weren't, I'm not saying that the proceedings of the court were just wide open and out there, but this provision would allow the FBI to go to get a court order through the FISA court, which is a special special panel of judges. They don't all have to hear the case at the same time, but a certain judges have been designated as FISA judges. The fact that they are FISA judges and the fact that this court exists is not secret, but the proceeding, 100% of the proceeding of this court is secret. There's an automatic gag order attached to any court order that comes through this provision. That's something that's different from the way that an FBI agent would have had to seek information from a library in the past. Gag orders are not new. There are often times when the judiciary determines that because of the nature of the information that's being sought, making the process public or letting the subject know that they're being watched would be damaging to the investigation. However, most of that comes out in a it has to come out if someone is accused of a crime and there's a court proceeding. Often in foreign intelligence surveillance, the subject that you're surveilling is not, you're not ever going to charge them of a crime in the United States. Often. Sometimes you do, but sometimes you just want them to continue to lead you to the information, to lead you to the cell or the, the foreign power, or sometimes they want those avenues of information to be open for a long period of time.
So because they're not preparing for a court case in a U.S. court, they don't have to follow all the rules of gathering intel and the information and making it legal in order to be able to use it in a trial.
That's sort of the logic behind the automatic gag order. You're not going to see that spelled out in legislation, but it's the logic behind the gag order. What the Patriot Act did was take that logic and make it apply to a much broader set of our society.
And the gag order also extends to anybody who works in any of those institutions in the broader set of society, including librarians, who can't give any information to that patron that they're being surveilled.
Absolutely. Yes.
So are these powers under Section 215 and the Patriot Act limited to investigating acts of terrorism? And if you are willing to get into this territory, what is terrorism?
Terrorism has not really been clearly defined in federal legislation. I think that is part of what is frightening about some of the expanded powers that have been that hinge on that concept, because it hasn't been clearly defined. And the Section 215 and FISA do focus on foreign intelligence surveillance, the domestic side of it, not surveillance in, you know, China or Russia or wherever, the Middle East. It does focus on surveillance on our land, on in the United States jurisdiction. So these are the vagaries are part of what causes concern about the act.
Now, in terms of libraries and bookstores, under current law with the Patriot Act, what information can the government demand? Can they only get the circulation records relating to a particular individual to find out what books they've been borrowing? Or can they get the names of everyone who borrowed a particular book that they're trying to track or keep an eye on who's borrowing it? Or can they even demand the entire circulation database all at once?
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I've talked about this subject with dozens of lawyers, and I've come up with at least that many different interpretations. There is the act does not limit them to a specific target. It allows them to focus on an area of investigation rather than one particular target. So in that way, it could allow them to gain access to all circulation records. I've had a few lawyers tell me they wouldn't do that, that would be too shaky. Access to all people who checked out a particular book. There again, you know, I've had people say they probably wouldn't use it this way. Point being, I've also had people say it could be used in this way. Section 215 could be used in this way. And we'll step back and remember that it says any tangible thing, which could mean a hard drive, which could mean, you know, the hard drive that the circulation database is stored on, the server that the circulation database is stored on. It could mean a hard drive of a particular computer that one of their suspects had used, regardless of the fact that it had been used by hundreds of other students or faculty or the public. So it is slightly vague, but I'll point out that it's extremely broad.
So do you know if these powers have already been used in regards to libraries or bookstores?
I have reason to believe that they have been. Librarians, people who are approached under this particular section are not supposed to talk about it, and probably should leave it at that.
Now, following up on that, you can get that information from other people, presumably. Are the Attorney General or other federal law enforcement officials legally mandated to report to Congress how they have used these powers and how often and you know, at what kind of details they're supposed to give?
There is a legal requirement for them to make a report to Congress. However, that legal requirement itself is not extremely specific. The Attorney General has made a report to Congress. However, there is some controversy over which committee has jurisdiction. Normally, the judiciary committees that have jurisdiction over and oversight over the Justice Department, the Department of Justice. The Justice Department preferred to make its report to the Foreign Intelligence Committees in Congress. They classified the information that they reported to Congress, or very much of it, not 100% of it, but very much of it. So what few details have been reported to our elected officials, the people who are supposed to be representing and protecting us, are not details that can even be shared with other congressmen. So there is a lack of sunshine in this area, and that's one of the things that we have been fighting for.
Now, I imagine that some people might hear all this and say, it doesn't bother me, I'm not a terrorist, why should I be concerned about this? What would you say to them?
You don't know what the FBI might suspect any one of us of. You don't know what the FBI might suspect the person sitting at a terminal before or after you of. That's the whole point of the concern here, that innocent people can be swept into investigations, and more importantly, many of us might lose some of that security of feeling that we have the freedom to read or look at things online without being, tailed all the time, if you will, virtually tailed. I think it's the tangential effects that we should be concerned about as well, not just whether or not the FBI is going to target you particularly, but what the overall impact is for your entire community.
Now, in the past, the federal government has spied on, infiltrated, and disrupted various social and political activist groups. It happened in the early 20th century against labor unions. It happened in the 1960s and 70s with the Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO, against civil rights and anti-war organizers. It happened in the 1980s against Central American Solidarity activists. But some might say that we're past all that. Section 215 of the Patriot Act includes language that says, an investigation conducted under this section shall not be conducted of a United States person solely upon the basis of activities protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Isn't that enough protection?
I think if you look back at our history and you look back at all of the times where we have sort of, based on some fear or the other, allowed greater intrusion into people's personal lives, I think you can see that there are reasons to be concerned. We seem to oscillate. We seem to go in sort of a pendulum swing, and I would venture to say that this won't be the last time that we have reason to be concerned. Also, if you look at that particular passage, it does say solely based on the activities protected by the First Amendment. The federal law enforcement agencies, if they feel that you're also involved in racketeering or drug running or anything else that they can... computer hacking, anything else that they can call illegal or anything else that is illegal, then your First Amendment activities are not protected.
So that's the First Amendment. How does the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable searches and seizures fare under the Patriot Act and Section 215?
I think that's going to have to play out in courts. I think that that's one of the places where, that's one of the points that the ACLU and some other bodies that have helped people litigate have used, particularly on the detention of some of the suspects that the FBI have held. That's going to have to play out in our court system, and we're going to have to see, you know, what kind of interpretation we get.
In the last couple of years, we've seen more than just the Patriot Act come out of Washington. We've also seen the passage of the Homeland Security Act and numerous executive orders by the President and the Attorney General. Have any of these other laws and policies affected the privacy of U.S. citizens or visitors to the to our country?
I would say yes, and I would say probably in addition to just the privacy of our citizens, also the openness of government. And I think that is every bit as important. You cannot have a democracy in secret. If the people of our country, if the voters of our country don't have information upon which to base their voting decisions, you don't have a democracy. You have a manipulated society. And I think that's probably the output of more of the additional administrative and legislative actions other than the Patriot Act.
Returning to the Patriot Act itself, what has been the response from librarians across the U.S.?
Well, as usual, our library field out there has been very active. They have promoted, they've been involved in many of the local resolutions you've heard about across the country. There are now, I think, 105 resolutions in different communities against the Patriot Act. There have been library associations across the country, state library associations across the country that have passed resolutions, particularly focusing on the parts of the Patriot Act that affect libraries. And you have to remember, the Patriot Act also included a fund for victims of September 11, increased border patrols, things that probably were necessary, were very helpful to our country, not just some of these things that concern us. So a lot of the librarians' energies have focused in on particular provisions that we find of concern. The American Library Association passed a resolution focusing on those particular provisions. And I'll say that it was a handful of librarians in Vermont that encouraged Bernie Sanders to introduce his legislation, which seeks to protect libraries from the overbroadness of Section 215 of the Patriot Act.
And how is that bill going in Congress?
It's really amazing and quite heartening. There are 83 co-sponsors at this point. They are from all walks of congressional life. They are both Democrats and Republicans and from a variety of different committees and interests. So, and it's not, it's a progressive amount of support for the bill. It's not 83 people that signed on the first couple of days it was introduced and it's been forgotten. It is a support that has continued to grow.
So that's something to watch as we move on into the future.
Absolutely. I'll make the point that only one Connecticut representative has signed on so far. So Connecticut has some work they can do there.
Also looking to the future, earlier this year, someone in Washington leaked a draft of the Domestic Security Enhancement Act. Most people are calling it Patriot 2, mm-hmm. Kind of like a sequel. And if this law, if this became law, how would it affect privacy?
The Justice Department likes to say it hasn't even been introduced, but I must take the opportunity to point out that that's the way legislation happens all the time in Washington. Drafts are floated around, and people respond to them and chew over them before they're even introduced. So the fact that it hasn't been introduced doesn't make this draft any less real. There are some pretty egregious expansions in there. None that focused in quite so much on libraries as Section 215, but increased law enforcement powers, increased surveillance powers. So it will continue to have an impact both on privacy and on governmental secrecy.
Do you know anything of the status of that and whether it's on the horizon in Congress?
Well, the theories that I've heard lately were that since it was leaked probably before the Justice Department actually wanted it to be leaked, and there has been this public outcry against so many different parts of it, probably what you can look for are pieces of it, little provisions pulled off and attached to different pieces of legislation. That becomes a lot more difficult to fight, and they will probably have some success. It means that all of us have to be more vigilant.
Is there anything else on the horizon, both in terms of legislation or opposition, that people concerned about this issue should be watching?
I think I've mentioned most of them. I think that people should find out what's going on in their own communities, whether or not any resolutions have been passed, any legislation. For instance, the whole state of Hawaii passed legislation that prevents any Hawaii funding from being used to help support any implementation of the Patriot Act. There is the H.R. 1197 Sanders bill that people should work for more co-sponsorship, and then once it winds up on the House floor, obviously positive votes on that. As far as things to watch, there's so many things to watch. I can't even enumerate them all. Like I said, we will probably see small portions of the Patriot 2 attached to many different things. So it's a time to be vigilant, and it's a time to re-examine some of the powers that we provided after 9/11. There was a real need for expanded law enforcement powers. With that expansion, there needs to be a balance in accountability and sunshine, and that's what we need to work toward.
And do you know of any websites or other resources that people can use to follow these issues?
There's our website, which you can start out at www.ala.org/washoff, W-A-S-H-O-F-F, for Washington Office. That's a good starting place for this whole set of issues. The ACLU obviously has a safe and free campaign that you can follow from their website. And there's an organization, actually, that is tracking and probably promoting as well the local resolutions, which is called the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and their website is at www.bordc.org.
So is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Be involved. Be watchful.
All right, Claudette Tennant from the American Library Association, thank you for taking the time for this interview.
Thank you for allowing me to join you, George.
That was Claudette Tennant of the American Library Association. She is an internet policy specialist of the ALA's Office of Information Technology Policy. To learn more about the USA Patriot Act and privacy issues, there are several websites available. The American Library Association's site on the topic can be found at www.ala.org/washoff for the Washington office /patriot.html. The American Civil Liberties Union has information at www.aclu.org/safeandfree/. And the Bill of Rights Defense Committee has tips on how your community can become a civil liberty safe zone at www.bordc.org. Finally, Vermont Congressman Bernie Sanders' bill is H.R. 1157, the Freedom to Read Protection Act of 2003. A web search can find you more information. This has been George King for 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. Thanks for listening.